This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, January 10th. I'm Julie Chang for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Zoe Thomas. Saturday, January 8th marked 1 year since Twitter permanently banned Donald Trump from its platform, following his series of tweets during and after the January 6th Capitol riot, and other social media companies soon followed suit. On today's show, a look back at the past year. The Wall Street Journal's tech reporter, Georgia Wells, joins us to discuss how banning Trump from the platforms ended up benefiting both the tech companies and even Trump himself. That's after these headlines. Meta's head of communications has left the company. John Panette ran public relations for Meta, formerly Facebook, since 2019. His departure Friday leaves a void at the top of the department managing controversies surrounding the tech giant. The Wall Street Journal published the Facebook file series in September, revealing that harm caused by the platform had been identified by the company's internal researchers. The disclosures were the subject of multiple congressional hearings, and last month, we reported that Meta chairman and CEO Mark Zuckerberg had ordered his subordinates to respond more forcefully to the bad publicity. Panette declined to comment further when reached late Friday, and a Meta spokesman didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. France has fined Google and Facebook for privacy violations. The country's data protection regulator says the companies make it too difficult to reject cookies, website identifiers used to track user data. The French regulator said users tended to accept them because doing so required just one click. Conversely, rejecting cookies took several steps. Google will have to pay $169 million as a penalty, and Facebook, $67 million. And officials gave the companies 3 months to create a simpler path to reject the tracking feature. Meta says it's reviewing the decision and remains committed to working with regulators. Google didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. GameStop is betting on NFTs, non-fungible tokens, and cryptocurrency in hopes of making a comeback. The video game retailer is launching a division to help develop its own NFT marketplace and establish partnerships with cryptocurrency companies. The partnerships would share technology and invest in blockchain games, among other things. GameStop has been struggling to turn a profit for years, made even more difficult with recent changes in leadership. WSJ tech reporter Sarah Needleman says the company sees NFTs and crypto as nascent but risky opportunities to diversify its business.
This is an entirely different field, so a starting point would be having the right talent in place. And the company has hired more than 20 people with engineering and blockchain-related expertise or cryptocurrency expertise. So that would certainly be one step. The other barriers are just the fact that this is really new. Many people are skeptical of NFTs. They question the value that they hold today and what their future value will be, the security of them. And right now, there's very limited options for using your NFTs. If you buy one, for example, for a video game, Ubisoft, a big game publisher, has doled out some for free. You could use it in one of their games. But the question is whether or not we'll be able to use those in other games.
And Google has lost a patent battle against audio developing and manufacturing company Sonos. A U.S. trade agency ruled last week that Google violated five of Sonos' audio patents related to synchronizing audio, adjusting volume, and connecting to Wi-Fi. Google has been barred from importing products that use those patents, which include some of its Nest speakers. Sonos' chief legal officer called on Google to pay a royalty for misappropriating their technology. A Google spokesman said they'll appeal the decision. The ruling is the latest in a series of lawsuits and countersuits between the two companies around patents. All right, coming up, what's changed on social media platforms after a year of Trump's ban from Twitter? We'll discuss after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
For just over a year, Donald Trump has been banned from mainstream social media platforms. At first, the bans didn't look like a good thing for either the social media companies or Trump. The companies risked losing engagement and Trump followers. But what actually happened? WSJ tech reporter Georgia Wells has been following the story, and she joins me now. Hi, Georgia. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you, Julie.
Georgia, there was a lot going on in those early days of January last year, especially after the January 6th attack. Take us back briefly. Remind us how Twitter made this decision to ban Trump from its platform.
So the day of the attack, January 6th, 2021, Trump tweeted a video that praised the rioters. And in response, Twitter locked his account, saying that it would remain locked for 12 hours until after he removed the tweet and two others that the company said represented repeated and severe violations of its policy that was kind of intended to guard civic integrity. And at the time, Twitter also warned that further violations of its rules could lead to permanently suspend Trump's account. So the next day, January 7th, Twitter allows Trump to resume posting. And then the day after that, January 8th, Trump tweeted, "The 75 million great American patriots who voted for me, America first and make America great again, will have a giant voice long into the future. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape, or form." And then shortly thereafter, Trump tweets, "To all of those who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on January 20th. So after these tweets, Twitter says it will permanently ban Trump's personal account. And for explanation, Twitter said that due to the ongoing tensions in the U.S. and the uptick in the global conversation kind of around the people who had violently stormed the Capitol, that these two tweets needed to be read in the context of sort of the broader events in the country and the ways in which the president's statements could be mobilized by different audiences, including to incite violence. So after these two tweets, you know, no more Trump on Twitter.
And what about other social media platforms? How did their approaches compare?
So Facebook took a fairly similar approach to Twitter. So at first on January 6th, Facebook removed a video from Trump that sort of reiterated kind of unsubstantiated claims that the election was stolen and expressed support for the protesters. And at this time, Facebook blocked Trump from posting for 24 hours. Now, the next day, Facebook said the company had decided to extend the ban it had placed on Trump's account for at least 2 weeks. Interestingly, the at least part of Facebook's statement ended up sort of doing a lot of heavy lifting because kind of as the weeks wore on, it became clear that Facebook's ban seemed to appear to be sort of indefinite without much explanation from the company. YouTube took an even less structured approach. At first, on January 7th, YouTube removed a video from Trump's channel that the company said violated its election integrity policy. And then several days later, on January 12th, YouTube said it was locking Trump's channel for at least 7 days after the company again removed videos that it said violated the policies around what the company believes could incite violence. And then in late January, YouTube said Trump's account would remain suspended. Trump said in a social media post that the companies were coordinating to silence him and his supporters. And in July, Trump sued the three tech companies, complaining he was wrongly censored.
Trump had a lot of followers on Twitter, so obviously the thinking was that being off the platform would be bad for him, but also potentially for the companies themselves. So let's start with the platforms. Has this been a net win or loss for them?
So from a business side, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, they all, when they suspended Trump, suddenly became able to say that they took action against one of the most powerful voices on their platforms. Because for years, these platforms had faced criticism that they failed to apply their rules to their highest profile users. Like, often we'd see examples of these companies kind of taking down the accounts of, you know, a lot of somewhat random users, and this was one of the most prominent users on any of their platforms. So on top of that, just because Trump himself is banned from the platforms, it doesn't mean that like all mentions of Trump are banned from the platforms. While these companies have banned Trump, they continue to sell advertising to him as well as his opponents and allies who have made him a key part of their own political ads. So for example, Facebook and Google have sold Trump's to political action committees more than $2 million worth of ads during the past year.
And what about for Trump himself?
So it turns out that Trump's popularity in some ways has actually increased since the ban. My colleague Mike Bender, he reported out that on Thursday, which was the 1 year anniversary of the attack on the Capitol, roughly 52% of Americans said they had an unfavorable view of Mr. Trump, compared to 43% who viewed him favorably. But that 9-point gap, that compares to a nearly 20-point gap in his favorability rating a year earlier. So his favorability is greater than it was a year ago. And this is at a time when he has not been on social media. Another surprising part that my colleague Mike reported is that Trump apparently has enjoyed his break from Twitter and actually, like, has found that now he has more time. So Trump told my colleague Mike, he said, "I saved a lot of time. I didn't realize you can spend a lot of time on this. Now I actually have time to make phone calls and do other things and read papers that I wouldn't read. And with me, if I put a comma out of place or I accidentally misspelled a word, it was like the world coming down."
Let's look ahead now. Trump has been talking about running again in 2024, but he's also talked about launching his own social media platform. How have the social media companies been responding to that? Will they put him back on, and does he even really need them to?
I think that, like, the reporting here has shown that they don't need to put him back, and in a way it's worked out pretty well for both Trump and the companies. But if Trump runs for office again, his social media platforms could likely be really helpful. And my colleague Mike reported that he's been kind of indicating that he maybe is interested in getting back on them. The social media companies, however, have said that whether Trump declares candidacy or not will have no bearing on whether they decide to reinstate his account. And like Twitter, for example, has been super clear, like his suspension is permanent. Facebook, though, is maybe the more interesting one to watch, because Facebook has indicated that it's going to revisit this decision in January 2023, which is really interesting timing just for, you know, looking ahead to future elections. And YouTube said that they're kind of constantly assessing the risk. Also, in some ways, Trump might not need the social media companies. You know, his campaign aides and the RNC chairwoman oversaw a multi-million dollar effort to build a list of emails and phone numbers for supporters. And the idea with this was so that the campaign could directly contact these people with fundraising appeals, kind of voter turnout requests and statements. So now this list includes about 50 million emails, according to people familiar with the matter. And Trump has relied on this list during the past year with his fundraising. So, you know, although the social media companies took away one of Trump's main kind of communication tools for reaching potential voters and voters, but it seems like he's got a pretty effective way of reaching people already.
All right, that was our tech reporter, Georgia Wells. Thanks again for being here, Georgia.
Thank you, Julie.
And that's it for today's tech news briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Julie Chang for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.